peu. Masse. M. No spin. Le système using a new form. You learn about the Schrödinger equation. And in addition, in one dimension. That's just for simplicity. We keep it simple. And it will be in a potential, in scalar potential. So it lives in a potential like for the harmonic oscillator when it's a quartic potential. That's a very simple system. And so what I'm going to consider as this particle, it lives on the real line, and its position is q of t, that's the position.
For the classical particle. And of course, you know that the classical system is described either by a Lagrangian or by an Hamiltonian formalism. And of course, the Hamiltonian H is p squared over 2m plus v of q, where v is a potential. Of q, which is regular, it would be some polynomial or something like that, and the Lagrangian is m over 2 q dot squared minus v of q, where q dot is dq over dt. Okay, that's very standard. And so that's the classical mechanics. And the quantum system, particles, you know that now the system is described by states in a Hilbert space. So you have an Hilbert space of states H, which in our case will be more or less the space of L squared function on R, of square summable function on R, because it's wave function or function on R. Okay, we have states. And we have observables that are operators. I will denote then A, B, etc., that are operator acting on the states. Okay, that represents the observable. Okay, and in particular, what I'm going to represent things in represent the states in the representation of position eigenstates that I'm going to denote Q, which are just the eigenstate of the position operator. So we have an example. We have the position operator, and we have the momentum operator, P, that obeys, of course, the commutation relation. Commutator of Q of P is I H bar. Okay? And the position eigenstate are just states such that Q, the operator Q, apply to the states. Q is just the value of Q. Q is a number times Q. Okay, that's very standard. Of course, if you are a bit aware of the mathematics, you will say, oh, but these states are not normalizable, so they do not belong to the Hilbert space, so there is a bit of mathematics to make that more rigorous, but as a physicist, I don't care, it works. Okay, but what's important with these position eigenstates, basically they represent a wave function that is localized just at Q, so it's some kind of delta function, is that they obey the rules that the scalar product of two states is just the delta function of Q2 minus Q1, so which means that they are not normalizable states. And the other thing that we need is that we have that the identity operator, one is an identity, can be written as an integral over the rule line over Q of the tensor product of Q with its conjugate. So it's just a decomposition of unity in the basis of, which means that the identity is a diagonal, so it's a consequence of this, in fact. Okay, so But we are going to just to need that. And with this notation, you know, for instance, that in fact to a state psi corresponds a wave function psi of q, which is just the scalar product of the states q with the state psi. Okay, so that's a function, and that's a vector in an abstract Hilbert space. Okay. So that's something very. And then, of course, what's important in this the physics of this system, of this simple system, is not only the structure of the states, but the dynamics. So the dynamics is given by the Schrödinger equation, so by an Hamiltonian. And the Hamiltonian, again, now the quantum Hamiltonian. Hamiltonian is just the operator p squared divided by 2m plus v of q. So the only difference is this is a function of an operator now, and p is an operator. And of course, the dynamics of the states is given by the Schrödinger equation. And rather than writing the Schrödinger equation in the usual way, I'm going to integrate the Schrödinger equation by writing simply that a state, if I state at time t equals 0 by a state psi naught, the dynamics states at time t, I am in a state psi t. And this state psi t can be written as u of t times psi of 0. The evolution is given by a unitary operator. And u of t is a unitary operator called the evolution operator. And this is simply, if you integrate the Schrödinger equation, the exponential of t over I h bar times the Hamiltonian. So consider that the exponential of an operator is just a generalization of the exponential of a matrix. Okay, so it can be defined in a proper way as its series expansion in t of the usual. Okay, so that's a well-defined operator. It's a unitary operator. And well, this is equivalent to the Schrödinger equation. Okay. So now you know that in fact, one last thing before going to the path integral, how to formulate that. I think you have seen that in quantum mechanics, you have different ways to represent the states and the operators because you can apply any unitary transformation. In particular, unitary transformation that depends on time. It corresponds to a change of basis. So in fact, there is the Schrödinger picture where the state psi of t depends on t. And the operator, the observable, are independent of t. So the position operator is always represented by the same operator q. That is just, in this case, multiplication of the wave function psi of q by q. Similarly, the impulsion operator, the momentum operator p, is represented by always the derivative with respect to q with h bar factor. Okay. Now, you know that you can use a different picture, so a different basis for representing your states and your operator, that is called the Heisenberg picture. And in the Heisenberg picture, in fact, so let me just take my notes to be sure not to make any mistakes of sign. Now, a given state psi, the states psi basically are independent of t, because if I am a state psi, I specify at which time I represent a state psi. So psi is a state in the Schrödinger picture. And to a given state psi in the Schrödinger picture corresponds to the state psi t in the Heisenberg picture at a given time t. That is obtained by taking the state psi and applying the operator u dagger of t, which is u of minus t. So basically, this state psi of t is a state that was equal to the state psi at a time minus t. Okay. Or rather the opposite, let's say, because this is u of minus t. So as you, I made the mistake. This is the state that would evolve into the state psi at time t. Okay. And this is just a chain of representation. So now the operator A depends on t. And you have to specify at which time you consider the operator t. And simply, by taking the operator in the Schrödinger picture and applying the operator u of t to the right, and then the operator u dagger of t or u of minus t to the left. Okay? And with this, in fact, you see that, as usual, this is just a change of variable. So you do not change anything. So in particular, you see that if now the states A depends on T, if I consider a state, I start at time T equals 0 from sine 0, and I let it evolve according to the Schrödinger equation. Yes?
Sorry, I'm just a bit confused by notation. Are you saying that in the Heisenberg picture, states evolve with time?
No. What I'm going to say is that the definition of state depends on the time. Well, so you have to specify when you consider a state at which time you consider this state. And if you start from a state psi naught initial at time 0, okay? At time 0. Okay, this is psi 0. Okay, and you see, you let it evolve according to the Schrödinger equation. At time t, you get a state psi t at time t with psi t given by this. And you see that this is psi naught. So states do not evolve in the study in the Heisenberg.
Thanks.
If you take a state and you let it evolve, the dynamics of the states is trivial. But the representation of the states, you have to keep in mind that the states are defined at a different at given time. So dynamics is trivial. Okay. But now the dynamics of the, so the dynamics here, of course, there is a dynamics. So the dynamics is now in the evolution of the operator. Okay. Good. Okay. And the dynamics of the operator is given, in fact, by what's something, what is called the Liouville equation. It's I h bar d over dt of a of t equal the commutator of a of t with h. Okay. But that's just a reminder. Okay. So now, let's go back to this evolution operator. And of course, we are interested, in fact, in its matrix element. We want to know if we start from a particle that is in a state localized at the initial point Q, how does it evolve? What is its quantum evolution? So we are interested into the evolution as a function of time. So this is the Q axis. I consider a particle that starts at time 0 from the initial time Qi at time t. And I'm asking, what is its quantum evolution? What is the probability amplitude that's some quantum evolution I don't know. And what is its probability amplitude to end up at time qf? Probability amplitudes. Okay? So this is just, in fact, contained into an object. It's equal to an object that is called the propagator or evolution kernel, which is just, let me denote the k. It will depend on the q final and the initial position of time. And it is, of course, simply given by the scalar products of the position set q final, u of t, q initial. That's just definition. Okay. And this corresponds to the probability amplitude, the quantum probability amplitude for a particle localized at time zero and at the position qi to be localized at time t at position qf. And the probability will be, of course, the square of this. This is the probability amplitude. So it contains a complex number. It contains a phase, quantum phase. OK. So of course, this is an expression of this probability amplitude in the Schrödinger picture. OK. And with those rules in the Heisenberg picture, this will be simply a scalar product of two states, qf at time t and q initial at time zero in the Heisenberg. Okay, but that's just two different ways to write the same number. Okay. Okay. So okay, so I'm done with the reminders and definition. And path integrals, the path integral method is a method basically devised by Richard Feynman, although some idea were a bit older, particularly Dirac, I think, had some hints of that. A way to write these probability amplitudes, not by solving the Schrödinger equation, because after all, you can solve this obeys a Schrödinger equation because it's basically some kind of wave function element. But to write it in a completely different way, to write it in terms of the classical dynamics. Okay. And let me show you how this works. So perhaps, So the point is that u of t, as we have seen, is the exponential of h. H is an operator that is a sum of two operators. An operator involving the momentum operator, and an operator involving the position operator. And we don't want to diagonalize H. We want to express things simply in terms of P and Qs. And the problem is that the Ps and the Q do not commute, as it should. We are in quantum mechanics. So, and this makes things a bit different because we know what is the commutator of Q and P. But the commutator exponential of P and exponential of T of Q is something different. Okay? So we would like to write what is U of T. And U of T can be written as exponential of A plus B, where A is an operator that is just, so with my notation, T over I h bar p squared over 2m, and b is t over I h bar v of q, and these operators do not commute. Okay, so this is different from, in particular, exponential of a times exponential of b, because this would be valid only if A and B would commute, and A and B do not commute. Okay. Well, let me check if I still remember how this works. This is fun. Yes, okay. So we are going to use, in fact, just a mathematical result, which is that also exponential of A plus B is different from exponential of A plus exponential of B. There is a trick. The trick is contained in an expression called the Trotter-Cato formula. It's a mathematical theorem, which tells simply that, in fact, this is equal to the limit, so that this formula is true if the operator A and B are very small, basically. Because if they are very small, you can write, instead of exponential of A plus B, you can write exponential of 1 plus A times plus B. And this is something like 1 plus A times 1 plus B. And if A and B are small, the difference between A plus B and 1 plus A plus B and 1 plus A times 1 plus B is over order AB squared, which is smaller, basically. So in fact, imagine that instead of writing that, you write exponential of A divided by some number n, times exponential of B divided by some number n, so that A over n is small and B over n is small, and for us, this is when n is very large, so I will have to take this to infinity. And so this is an operator, and let us take it to the power n so that at the end we get something that is looks like that. So if A and B were just number commuting, this would be true. If A and B are not number but operator, that's not true in general, but the result is that this becomes true in the limit when n goes to the infinity. Okay. And you can check, in fact, very easily that, in fact, that's because the commutator of A over n and of B over n is of the order 1 over n squared. So the difference between this and exponential of A over n plus B over n is of order 1 over n squared. And when you multiply something that is equal to basically something plus 1 over n squared to the power n, you get an error, which is 1 over n. And that's enough when n goes to infinity. So that's basically the idea. OK, so that's a mathematical result that is going to be used. OK, so go there, back there, because there is a better view. Okay, so we start to this. And now, so we can express everything in terms of exponential of two operators, where those operators do not mix P and Q. So we have to consider what is exponential of I over h bar p squared over 2m with some time interval. I'm sorry, this is some time t. What is the matrix element between 2? Well, let us write q and q prime. What is the matrix element of this, which is just the propagator of a free particle, a particle with no potential? Well, then this is easy to compute. It's an exercise. You can, for instance, just take momentum state instead of position state so that you diagonalize this operator. And it's just an exercise of Fourier transform, which shows that this is, if I'm not 2i pi h bar t divided by m to the power minus 1 half. This is a normalization. And there, then there is a pure phase, which is exponential of I over h bar q prime minus q squared divided by t times m divided by 2. So that's an exercise. Prove this. And you can show it either by solving the Schrödinger equation or use p states instead of q states to compute the matrix element. Okay, so that's the first point. And the second point is that now, what is q prime? Exponential of t over I h bar v of q. That's trivial because the q are eigenstate of v of q. This is just exponential of I over h bar, t over I h bar. This is exponential of t over I h bar v of little q, not capital Q, not the operator, but the number, times delta of q prime minus q. Okay. So now, using this, we can express this by simply decomposing. Now, we decompose the interval, time interval, the interval of time, 0 t into capital N small intervals of length delta t. So let us say I have 0, I have t, I cut delta t, so I have delta t equal t divided by some n, with n some large number, and it will go to infinity. And use this formula and simply insert those operators instead of each one. So in that case, you see that I can write the operator. K of q initial, q final, q initial, and t are in fact, so I insert 1 at each point. So I define, I insert, and I use this path integral, so I insert a big integral over r to the power n minus 1, d q1 up to d q n minus 1. So I write 1 equal integral d q q q. So I have an intermediate state q A for each TA equal A times delta T. And by definition, I state that Q0 is Q initial and QN is Q final. So these ones are fixed, but all the other are. You have to integrate over because you insert 1, which is an integral over this QA. Okay? And then you get those matrix elements. So you get a matrix element of these operators with just replacing T by delta T. So if you prefer, if you want to be sure. Now I replace this by delta T. I have a delta T and a delta T, and the same here. and I replace at each point Q and Q prime by Q, let us say QA and QA plus 1. QA and here QA plus 1 QA. Like that. Okay? And you end up with something very nice. You get first a big factor here, 2i pi h bar delta t over m to the power n minus 1. No, I'm sorry, n divided by 2 because there are n, in fact, intervals. And then you get exponential of I over h bar sum from a equal 1, well, let us write this from a equal 0 to n minus 1 of I over h bar. So I have a over h bar is already written here. Then I'm going to write an m over 2 qa plus 1 minus qa squared divided by delta t. But let me write this delta t as delta t squared and delta t. So this is for the first, this element. And this element will be simply given by delta t over I h bar, which is I over h bar delta t minus V of q a plus 1. Okay. Okay. And of course, this will be the limit when n goes to infinity. This is an approximation that becomes exact when the number of points is infinite. Okay? Is it clear? I just used basically the explicit formula for the propagator for the free particle. And the decomposition of unity, namely the superposition principle. So this is nothing but ordinary quantum mechanics. Okay. And now there is a very nice interpretation of that, because this, what does it mean? Let me draw again this small picture. This is the axis of time. This is the initial time. This is the final time. What I am doing is that I am expressing the probability amplitude to go to an initial position for a particle to go to some initial fixed position to some final fixed position as an integral over some intermediate position, something like that. You see? So this is time TA equal A times delta T. I am at the position QA. Okay? And so, since this delta t is very small, in fact, I can consider that I am integrating over some kind of piecewise linear history. So this is the sum over piecewise linear histories q of t. Well, this is a total. Okay? And what is this? This is the speed of the particle. This is the v of q, and in fact, you can it's easy to see that you can replace this. By v of qa plus v of qa plus 1 divided by 2, which is the average potential viewed by the position. This is the term of order O of 1 over n term difference. OK. So what you are doing, in fact, is that you are summing over all the possible trajectories of the particle from initial point to initial point. So this is the sum of our histories. This is some weight. And this is the sum of the time intervals times m over 2 times the velocity minus v of q. So this is nothing but the limit when n goes to infinity, namely delta t goes to 0, of an integral over histories. And I'm going to write this as a big measure. So this is a measure. Histories, q of sigma, so q of s. Let me write the time s, because I have a time t that is labeled s, because what I call t is the sixth. It's the difference between the initial time and the final time for my probability amplitudes. So I sum over all histories q of s, which satisfies only one constraint. It satisfies the constraint that at time 0, q of 0 is equal to q initial. And at the final time, the position is the final position. But otherwise, all the intermediate positions are free. So I have some measure. And then I have exponential of something that is I over h bar times this quantity that is nothing but so this quantity here. Is just a discretized version of integral from 0 to t of ds. This is the intermediate time, times m over 2 times dq over ds squared minus v over q. OK? So this is a Lagrangian. This is a classical Lagrangian. And this quantity is called S of Q. This is a classical action. The integral of a Lagrangian of a trajectory along the time. So this is S of Q, the classical action, S of Q. So this is the propagator, the probability amplitude. Okay. So this is the Feynman pass integral representation of this probability amplitude. It's given by the sum over histories with some given measure, and the measure is given by this term. Let me write the measure. This is the measure. This is the measure. And this is a phase, if you want, associated to each history. So the phase exponential of I over h bar times this number, this phase is just proportional to the action, the classical action. So you can express this probability amplitude as a sum over all possible histories that do not of course, obey the classical equation of motion, but they interfere to produce a quantum theory. If you want, you can formulate that. You have a picture which is that quantum theory equal sum of interferences of classical trajectories. Classical in the sense that they are classical objects, are positioned as a function of time, but they are not classical because those trajectories do not obey the classical equation of motion. So they are classical objects, but not classical, or if you want, classical-like . So this is the path integral. Okay. Any question? Yes.
Should the exponent in measure be negative n over 2?
It's a negative, yes. I'm so very sorry. This is a typo, because of course here there's a minus 1/2. Yes, very important. If you make a mistake in the measure, you won't get the proper normalization. Okay. So one remark, perhaps. You see that, in fact, what? You cannot really disentangle between the action and the measure because the measure depends on the mass. The particles. So the measure doesn't depend on the potential or the force exerted, but it depends on the mass of the particle. So this is a very convenient way to write, but be careful, you know. The only object that is, in fact, well-defined mathematically is this times this object. Okay. Good. So now we are going to discuss the physical significance of this a bit later or tomorrow. So let me continue a little bit the formalism before. And I'm going to discuss something that is now a bit, looks to us, perhaps will look to you a bit strange. I'm going to consider what's going on at imaginary time. Okay. You'll see that it's, in fact, it's a bit formal, but it's very useful. Okay. So let's go back to the evolution operator u of t, which is exponential of t over I h bar h, where h is the Hamiltonian. Okay? We have seen that this is a unitary operator, but of course, it's a unitary operator. Operator if t is real, if the time is real. And in fact, it's useful to ask the question, what happens if we treat the time as a complex variable? We theoretical physicists are very used to, when we have something, we always ask, what's happening when if it was complex? Sometimes it's a stupid question, sometimes it's a good question. And then I'm going to remind you that we remember in the formalism here, we consider that operators are operator acting in the linear operator acting on the Hilbert space. So in fact, I think in the course in quantum mechanics, you were said that the operators belongs to linear operators just belong to some algebra, which is the algebra of L of A, linear operator. I'm sorry, L acting on the Hilbert space. Okay. Now, in fact, that's a too big an algebra operator, as long as we consider a system with an infinite number of degrees of freedom, namely not an infinite number of degrees of freedom, but with an infinite number of states, so with an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. In general, you are interested in considering the bounded operators, namely the algebra that is called B of H. And what is an operator? An operator is bounded if basically all its eigenvalues are bounded. And we can define, if we have an operator A, we can define its subnorm as the maximum for all states in the Hilbert space of psi A dagger A psi divided by psi, the norm of psi. Okay? So basically, this is you see, this is the maximum of the possible eigenvalues of the operator A times A dagger. Yes?
Is the reason why we want to go to B of H just because.
Pardon?
Is the reason that we want to go to B of H just because we can't define that norm on any similar norm on L of H?
In fact, the reason is that all the mathematical theory of operator acting on Hilbert space, and even more abstract, which was started to be built by John von Neumann. He was motivated by quantum mechanics because he was one of the inventors of quantum mechanics and then built up by mathematicians and used by physicists, is used on those algebra, which have much better properties than the algebra of all linear operators that in general are not bounded. Okay? So in fact, this algebra of bounded operators, so an bounded operator is a set of operators A in L of H such that the norm of A is finite. Okay? And this this algebra has very nice properties. In fact, such an algebra is an example of what is called a C-star algebra. I won't explain what a C-star algebra is, but basically it's this kind of object. Okay, and that's the basic tools for doing the math, the rigorous math of quantum mechanics. And because these operators have a lot of very nice properties. And in fact, the states, the theory of states and operators in quantum mechanics is built out of this object. And so you see that if the spectrum of S is a spectrum of H is bounded from below, which means if there is a ground state, and usually all quantum system, there is a ground state. You see very easily that U of T is, in fact, if T is complex, U of T is bounded if the imaginary part of time is positive. Negative, I'm sorry. That's a big mistake. Because if it's negative, the imaginary part gives you an exponential of minus something times h, which is a bounded operator. Exponential of plus h is not bounded, but exponential of minus h. So as a physicist, we consider real time, t. As a mathematician, I ask, can I make sense of a complex time, and the unitary operator for a general quantum theory is not defined in the upper half plane, but it's perfectly well defined in the lower half plane. So in particular, it is well defined if time is purely imaginary. So if t equal minus I tau with tau positive, this is well defined. So what is this operator? What is u of t equal minus I tau? This is just, of course, exponential of minus tau over h bar h. So this is now a self-adjoint operator, positive operator, and bounded operator. Okay? But you should recognize this object. This is nothing but the density matrix of the same system at finite temperature. Remember, now consider what is the density matrix of the system at finite temperature. So I get a system at finite temperature T. I define the Boltzmann factor, which is 1 over Boltzmann constant times the temperature. So big T is the temperature. It's not the time. Okay? We know that the density matrix of this system at finite temperature, that is called rho of beta, is just 1 over z of beta times exponential of minus beta times the Hamiltonian with z of beta equal trace of exponential of minus beta h. So all what we can learn on the system, if we, it's not in a fine, in defined state, but it's just a changing energy with a big thermostat, so that all we know is that its temperature is that it is given by this density matrix. Okay? And the density matrix, in fact, involves precisely this object, the unitary, the evolution operator at imaginary time. So let me, just a change of notation, write this ue of tau, where e is Euclidean. So I call this Euclidean evolution operator. Why Euclidean? Euclidean because think about what's going on if you start from a system at real time and you make time imaginary. So up to now, we are considering non-relativistic particle. So we had only time, and time and space and the position of the particle are on completely different settings. They are not treated. We are in Newtonian dynamics, classical dynamics. So time is absolute, and position is one of the degrees of freedom of the particles. Now let's go back to special relativity. In special relativity, we have Minkowski space-time. Now time and space are just on the same footing. They are coordinates of space-time. And the space-time line element is defined as minus dt squared plus dx squared, where I am using the notation that the signature of space-time is minus plus plus plus, and I am setting using a system of coordinates where the speed of light is 1. Okay. So this is a line element in space-time. Now, do this trick. Go from there to there. Consider that now time is imaginary. And purely imaginary. then the line element becomes d tau squared plus dx squared. Oh, sorry, you probably don't see anything. This is me. Okay, is it better for you? Yes, you should have a complaint. Okay, so you see that now this is Minkowski spacetime. This is Euclidean metric, Euclidean spacetime. So, imaginary time here. Becomes simply another coordinate of space. We just have Euclidean space. Okay. So that's a way to define some kind of quantum theory in Euclidean space instead of Minkowski space. Okay, so for the moment, it's just some kind of magic and analogy, but that's a very useful analogy. And we are going to see that in quantum field theory, that's something very useful and very important. OK. So now, let's see. Can we represent the matrix element of this Euclidean unitary operator? Can we represent what I'm going to call Ke of QF Q? I tau, which is a matrix element between the initial and the final state of UE of tau. May I represent this matrix element of this operator as a path integral? The answer is yes, because you can use exactly the same formula. Simply, you replace everywhere here time by minus I times Euclidean time. So repeat the operation, path integral. Yes, just repeat with t replaced by minus I tau. And what we get is something. We get exactly the same thing. We get that if we start from Euclidean time, from time 0 to time tau, let me call Euclidean time sigma. Here it was S, so now it's natural to call it sigma. I start from an initial position qi, and I want to end up at the final position qf. I make a decomposition with a delta tau element, and I get a sum over trajectories Q of sigma, but those are histories, namely they are just mathematical functions as a function of Euclidean time, so they are not physical histories, they are just mathematical objects. But I get exactly the same thing. I get a limit when n goes to infinity, because in order to define everything, I have to cut in slice, but of an integral over dq of sigma, but this will be with a measure slightly different. So I get a sum at the history at Euclidean time Q of sigma, with the only constraint that Q of 0 equal Q initial and Q at final time Q tau equal QF, some measure. And if you work things a little bit, you see that I replace delta t by minus I some delta tau. So So here I get 1 over minus I times delta tau. So 1 over minus I makes I. I times I makes a minus sign. So the phases disappear. But here I have delta tau minus 1. So I have minus I times delta tau minus, which makes a factor of I 2. So I get the same I. So I get now exponential of, instead of having a factor I, I have a factor 1 over h. And I have something that is not exactly the same. So that's something that I'm going to call the Euclidean action. And the Euclidean action SE for a trajectory Q is just the integral from 0 initial time to final Euclidean time, integral over intermediate Euclidean time of m over 2 dq over d sigma squared plus v of q of sigma. Okay, so that's the analog of this equation. But this is, if you want, the Lagrangian at Euclidean time. Yes?
You start off like all of this in like the non-relativistic limit.
Yes.
And you've written down the path integral for a non-relativistic particle.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious why originally, like, you made the claim that now changing to imaginary time has moved from like Lorentzian to Euclidean. When
yes.
I thought we were in Euclidean space already.
Yeah. Oh, so this point. This point.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, why you, I mean, I definitely know, like,
no.
The left-hand side of
yeah.
Minkowski,
no.
But I'm curious as to why, like, we said that going to imaginary time to send us to Euclidean space when I thought we were in Euclidean.
Yes,
space.
But here, yes, no, that's true for our system, but here I just have one-dimensional Euclidean space.
Yeah.
So if you want, in quantum mechanics, you have time and space is something completely different. So in Euclidean on quantum mechanics, you have an Euclidean time that is a space,
mm-hmm.
but still the space variable, the space degrees of freedom, the position of the particle is treated on a different footing.
Okay.
So at that stage, it's just an analogy. Don't think that by going from real time to Euclidean time, we went to a non-relativistic system to a relativistic system. That's not true. Okay, so we have the Euclidean action, and of course, an important point is that here there is a plus sign instead of a minus sign. Okay, and the measure here, this dE of q. Again, that's the limit of this factor with I delta t replaced by I times delta tau, or delta sigma, if you want. So this is something which is a product of an intermediate time of dq of sigma a times 2 pi h bar delta sigma divided by m to the power minus n over 2, where delta sigma is tau divided by n. And sigma a is a times delta sigma. Okay? So all the I factors, all the phases have been replaced by. Oh, and there is a factor minus. I'm very sorry. That's very important. Because remember, I times minus I times 1 over minus I squared gives factor minus 1. So this factor minus 1 is very important. Okay? Okay. And now, one last thing, and perhaps I can go, since it's an important point, I can go. Okay, so now this matrix element, this Euclidean, if you want this Euclidean time propagator defined by this path integral is something quite abstract. It's an abstract, it's a well-defined mathematical object. But you may think, well, what does it correspond to? And you are right. Now, there is something that is physically meaningful. It's a partition function. What is a partition function? Finite temperature T of the system, Z of beta, which is equal to trace of exponential of minus beta H. Because that's, if you want, a physical quantity. Its logarithm will be the free energy of a system. So you, when you are doing thermodynamics, you are considering this object. And for instance, if H is diagonalized, if H equals sum over n of E n times nn, these are the energy levels, and these are the energy eigenstates, if you want, if you know the spectrum of your theory, etc. Z of beta is just sum from over n of exponential of minus beta e n. This is just the Gibbs partition function, as in classical mechanics, classical statistical mechanics. Okay, so that's something we know. So how can we represent, do we have a representation of this using this Euclidean path integral? Well, we can write Z of beta by diagonaling H, but we can also represent it by simply writing the trace as integral over dQ, Q, exponential of minus beta H, Q. We just re-express the trace of a matrix in a different basis. So here I express the trace of the matrix in the basis of eigenstate. Here I express the trace of the same matrix in the position states. Well, it's not diagonal, of course. It's not diagonal, but this object is just integral dq from over r of q ue of tau q with a very important relation that beta equal tau over h bar. Remember, this is how ue was defined. So if I replace t over h bar by the beta here, this is exactly the same object. And this, I know how to represent it because I can represent it as a path integral. Okay, so the only difference here is now that I start from a Q and I end up at the same Q and I integrate over Q. So there is not a constraint on that. The constraint is only that Q of 0 is equal to Q of 2. So this is nothing but a path integral over Euclidean time Q, exponential of minus 1 over h bar SE trajectories. When I'm summing over trajectories such that Q of 0 equal Q of tau, and that's it. So now I am summing over trajectories in Euclidean time, such that after a time tau, I end up at the same point, but that's the only constraint. So I am summing over trajectories Q of sigma with the only constraint that they are periodic in Euclidean time. With period tau given by this representation. So tau is h bar times beta, namely h bar over Boltzmann times the action. And that's a second very important relation. You see? So this means that finite temperature for a quantum system is equivalent to have periodic time with this relation. Period and basically the period is h bar divided by the temperature. You see? Okay. And that's again an analogy, but it's a mathematical statement. But because this is periodic time, so it's not real time. The time is not periodic. The system is not going back to itself in a cyclic universe. It's the Euclidean time that is periodic. But still, it's a very useful analogy. Because this means, if you like, that if you want this picture here, this picture, that time is maybe considered as a complex variable living in a lower half plane. At finite temperature, in fact, at finite temperature T, time, in fact, as a complex variable may be considered as living on the torus of the cylinder. Going from minus infinity to plus infinity in the real direction, but in the imaginary direction, it is cyclic. Okay. And well, it's time to stop, but one last remark. This is valid for a quantum system at finite temperature and at equilibrium. So in contact with a big thermostat, exchanging energy, and in its equilibrium state. So this analogy that system at finite temperature may be viewed as a system complex and periodic Euclidean time is valid only for that case. If you consider a quantum system out of equilibrium, so it's in contact with the thermostat, but it's not yet at equilibrium. It's relaxing toward its equilibrium. This is not valid. You have to be more careful. And if you consider a quantum system at equilibrium, well, not at equilibrium, but exchanging with a more complicated system than the thermostat, this analogy is not valid anymore. So That's a very nice analogy, very powerful. It will be used later on. But it has its limits. It's not that any quantum system in some statistical state can be described in that way. It's only if it's at finite temperature and at equilibrium. Okay, so it's time to stop. Next time, we are going to discuss what's going on for when we consider not only the evolution operator, but general observable, because of course in quantum physics, you are not interested only in the evolution of the wave function without perturbing it. You are interested in what's happening when you make measurements. What are the properties of this system? So next time. Observables and operators. Okay? Thank you. No question? Yes?
You said before that the UT is the normal UT is less than infinity if the imaginary T is less than zero, less than or equal to zero.
Yes.
But if T is like if imaginary T is positive but finite,
in general, no. No, in general, it's not possible because as soon as the spectrum has something, you get into trouble. In general. It would be, you know, any matrix element here, any matrix element will be an analytic function of T, but you will have singularities. So let me perhaps draw a picture of time here. So this is my real time. This is my imaginary time. So this is a complex time. In general, when you consider U of T, or if you want any matrix element A, B of U of T, it's analytic function here, but it will have a lot of singularities, in fact, here, and in general, it will have already an accumulation of singularity here. So it will have a well-defined limit when imaginary part of time goes to 0 minus. But as long as you go a bit further, you are in trouble because these are infinite, it's not normalized. So there are exceptions. For instance, if you consider there are some very special case where you can go a bit further, and you have sometimes poles, but you can go over. But that's in general, it will correspond to some system. For instance, if you consider, I think, the harmonic oscillator or the free particle, some system that have some integrability properties, and you might go a bit further as far as the matrix element are concerned. But if you consider a system that has not a particle in one dimension, but in, I don't know, in three or four dimensions, that has a chaotic behavior, I think then everything breaks down. And in any case, U of T is infinite here. So the math are some quantity makes sense, but the mass breaks down at some point very quickly. Okay? Yes?
When we calculated the path integral, we stayed along the imaginary axis.
Yes?
We couldn't really consider trajectories that move off the axis as long as it stays in the lower half plane.
Very good question. I'm worried because I was hoping nobody would ask it. You may consider what? We have seen that we have been considering at real time a trajectory that evolves above the, so this is the Q of T is a function above the real axis. Now, let me draw this picture. So let me assume that the imaginary axis in this direction. So this is a complex time plane, and we have seen that this, perhaps I should use some color not to make things too messy. So this is a, let us say, this is a real time, this is a real time trajectory. This is an imaginary time trajectory, where here, I'm here, and here, I'm here. If I understood your question is, what happens if you consider a trajectory where time, well, it has to go like that. So what happens if you consider a trajectory that goes along a, well, let me choose a third color to make things. I consider a pass in time like that, and above that, I consider a trajectory that goes that, you know, go into that. So that's your question.
Yes.
Yes. What if I consider a trajectory Q of t with t complex, and in the complex plane t tau, it's something like that. Okay. Well, the answer is quite simple, in fact. As a function of t and of delta t, the matrix element of the evolution operator are analytic function of delta t. And we integrate over a function along a contour. We integrate a function that is an analytic in T along a contour in T. So my Cauchy principle, this is independent of time. So if you compute it along this path, or this path, or this path, you get the same result, independent. You see? So this contour time, or this contour, gave the same results. What's important is that you should not do that. Because if you do that, you go up in time, and that's forbidden. So it's the contour in time has always to either go horizontally or go down. You cannot go up.
You should still have the same answer, right? Since there are no poles inside.
Yes, but we know that there are a lot of singularity here. In general, there will be singularities. Mm-hmm. And that's valid, in fact, for any dt. So in fact, as long as you try to go up, your path integral is not defined anymore because the matrix elements blow up. See. But you can do that. And for instance, we are going to discuss that tomorrow. You can consider a contour of integration that goes like that. Because here you go in positive time, but real time, so this is well defined. You go down, you go, so you consider u dagger of real time, and then you consider u of tau. This is a contour that is perfectly well defined. And this contour will allow us to define the matrix element of operator at real time in a thermal state. We are going to discuss this tomorrow. But for those of you who know the term, this kind of picture is called the Schwinger-Keldysh two-time formalism. Those of you who haven't heard about that, forget about it. But for those of you who are a bit advanced, this is a formulation in path integral formulation of a formalism to deal with time correlation function and out of equilibrium system and quantum mechanics. Okay. Another question? Okay, thank you.